March 21st, 2018. Hundreds of thousands of high school students defy adult authority and walk out against mass shootings. Anti-pipeline camps hold strong from Virginia to West Virginia to so-called British Columbia. Brazil erupts after an anti-police brutality politician is assassinated, while the annual march against police brutality in Montreal beats cops back. Russian anarchists explain why it's not just Putin that's the problem, or Trump for that matter, but the systems of power they inhabit. Plus, a repression roundup and calls for exciting upcoming anarchist book fairs and speaking tours on this episode of The Hot Wire, a weekly anarchist news show brought to you by The X Worker, with me, the Rebel Girl. A full transcript of this episode with show notes and useful links can be found at our website, crimethink.com/podcast. You can subscribe to The Hot Wire on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The X Worker. You can listen to us through the Anarchist Podcast Network, Channel Zero, or on your radio's dial in Eugene, Oregon, every Sunday at noon on KEPW 97.3. Fairbanks, Alaska, Saturday mornings at 9 on KWRK 90.9. And in Tacoma, Washington, every Friday at 9 a.m. on KUPS 90.1. Believe it or not, every Hotwire is radio ready. And in our show notes, you can download a 29.5-minute version of this episode for standard radio time slots. If there's a story or upcoming event you'd like us to include in a future Hotwire, just hit us up at podcast@crimethink.com. And now, for the headlines. Lovers at the Wiri Women's Prison in New Zealand have been setting fires to their facility in protest of being denied the choice to share a cell together. In Portland, Oregon, anarchists and anti-fascists have been organizing community defense patrols with their houseless neighbors in response to a string of arsons targeting people who live on the street. On Thursday, riots broke out in Madrid after a Senegalese street vendor died after being chased by police. Demonstrators, many of them migrants themselves, called the police cowards and murderers and damaged banks, bus stops, and dumpsters. On March 6th, during the second demonstration in less than a month, anarchists rioted outside the Pedagogica University in Bogota, blockading the financial district for hours, smashing corporate windows and covering the walls in anarchist graffiti. The demonstrations take place during a controversy over educational funding, but a report on Contra Info details how anarchists, feminists, and trans folks have participated in the demonstrations to argue for far more radical changes than simply more university funding. It's been a rough week for fashion outlet H&M, who, as Vandalisms on It's Going Down reports, got into some hot water for filming an ad in front of street art painted by Revoke, who then insisted they didn't get permission to do so. We don't care about Revoke's or anyone's intellectual property rights. The interesting part is when this story broke in graffiti writer circles all over the U.S., and the calls on social media to boycott H&M quickly gave way to multiple vandalism attacks on stores. H&M stores in cities like San Francisco, Minneapolis, and Philly have all been subjected to some beautifully ugly revenge tags. Check out the Vandalisms column on itsgoingdown.org for the photos. And check out The Walls Are Alive, a graffiti guide republished by CrimeThink for ways to get started in the thrilling world of guerrilla beautification. It's also been a rough week for the alt-right. Richard Spencer admitted defeat after the anti-fascist opposition he faced in Michigan, which we reported on in Hotwire 21. Now, Spencer has canceled his upcoming university speaking engagements. Anti-fascism works, y'all. In Indiana, a bizarre, Jerry Springer-esque drama has unraveled the Traditionalist Workers' Party when leader Matt Heimbach was caught sleeping with his wife's stepfather's new wife. And it was Heimbach's wife and stepfather who busted them. The stepfather, by the way, was also the group's spokesman. He was standing on a box to witness the gross Nazi sex when the box collapsed and alerted Heimbach that someone was outside. The spokesman was literally deplatformed, and it descended into assaults, arrests, police reports, and the former spokesperson publicly resigning and taking the fascist group's website down with him. Meanwhile, DeAndre Harris, one of the three black Charlottesville residents who faced charges after the neo-Nazi Unite the Right rally that ended in Heather Heyer's murder, was found not guilty. DeAndre faced bogus assault charges after being beaten himself by white supremacists on the day of the rally. An alt-right campaign lobbied a judge to issue a warrant for him based on doctored video provided by online trolls. The acquittal is a victory for sure, but there are still two more Charlottesville-based black people facing charges for protesting white supremacy that day. Head over to SolidarityCville.com. That's SolidarityCville.com to find out how you can support them. Hopefully, as the alt-right unravels, anarchists will have more energy to focus on the revolutionary overthrow of larger systems of oppression and authority, rather than just preventing a truly fascist movement from growing. March 15th was International Day Against Police Brutality, and anarchists in Toronto observed the day by pasting posters around town with information on particularly brutal cops. This tactic is traditionally used by anti-fascists who want to warn neighbors about Nazis in their neighborhood. And this action is a great example of how we can use the skills and strategies we've developed fighting against fascism and use them in broader struggles. International Day Against Police Brutality was also observed in Montreal, as it has been for the last 22 years, with a fierce confrontational demonstration. Hundreds marched behind a banner that translates to, "The whole world hates police and fascists." Cops were attacked with flagpoles, covered in paint, and banks got their windows smashed. Three comrades were arrested, and one was seriously injured. On March 15th in Brazil, nearly 20 cities saw protests against police brutality and state violence in response to the assassination of Marielle Franco, a Rio de Janeiro councilwoman who spoke out against the police. We have an exclusive report from an anarchist correspondent in Brazil.
The last Wednesday, March 14, the city council member Marielle Franco and her driver Anderson Gomes were shot and killed in a car leaving in a gathering with hosting a debate with black women in downtown Rio de Janeiro. The attack has all the signs of ambush and execution because nothing was stolen and she was shot mostly in the head and from behind. Days before and months before also, Marielle was denouncing on social media and every interview, everywhere, the police brutality in the neighborhood of Acari and many others in Rio de Janeiro, where the military police battalion responsible for the region is perpetrating executions and threatening the people who live there. Most recently, she was one of the voices against the army occupation of the city and the state of Rio de Janeiro after the president, Michel Temer, took away the control of security from the governor of the state and give it to a general of the army. It's an unprecedented measure which reveals the constitutional aspects of this government, which use explicit state of exception to keep control of people and the poor. People from all over the country and social movements are showing they are concerned with the extreme violence used by those who want to shut up a voice, who dare to speak up against police brutality and state violence. Dozens of prominent members of social movements were already killed this year and the last year in the country. But the thing is that maybe the fact that a militant who has the fifth highest vote count among council members in Rio de Janeiro that was in a big left party and was like shot in the middle of the street, in the middle of downtown, in a big city like Rio de Janeiro, shows that not even a position of power can protect you in the civil war that is happening right now in Brazil, and more specific and most than ever in Rio de Janeiro right now. In the next day and the weekend later, hundreds of thousands of people joined the marches against police brutality and denouncing the murder of Marielle and Anderson Gomes. In March 15, we have like huge march in almost 20 cities in Brazil and many other cities around the world like Buenos Aires, Montevideo, Paris, London, Coimbra, Santiago, Bogota, showing solidarity. And of course, the media is the one of the agents trying to hijack the discourse and trying to whitewash the radical aspects of Marielle activism and spread the notion that she was like fighting only for vague and generical politics like the human rights, and using the murder to justify even more the occupation, as if the crime which took her life away was happened because there was no police enough on the streets. Many anarchist collectives and groups are joining the protests and the campaigns denouncing the murder of Marielle, showing solidarity above all things. She was a lesbian woman and a long-time grassroots militant and on feminist and movements and black resistance on the favelas. Her work at the biggest University of Rio de Janeiro was dedicated to expose the military occupation. She was a comrade of all those who fight against oppression, state violence, and patriarchy. As anarchists, we should express unconditional support of a comrade like this. Despite she became a politician or not, the political strategy of her activism is secondary right now. We cannot let her murder become a justification for more police on the streets, because police are the worst perpetrators of terrors in cities like Rio de Janeiro. And the bullets used to kill her was the same bullets used by the police. And those who killed her knew how to make hard for the investigations to find out who did it. So it's not too soon to say that it was. It has all the aspects of crimes committed by the milicianos, the gangs of police and paramilitary criminals. This year is a year of election for president and governor and many others. We cannot let the murder of another comrade become the justification of more politics of genocide against the black and poor. We should keep on fighting as well as keep our battle for discourse. At the same time, we show solidarity for those who fall.
In Peters Mountain, West Virginia, the Treset blockading construction on the Mountain Valley Pipeline is entering its third week strong. Meanwhile, the Three Sisters Pipeline Resistance Camp in so-called Virginia, occupied Monacan and Tutelo land, just went public. The camp has been in preparation for months, and just last week they announced the start of a public campaign against the Atlantic Coast Pipeline in Virginia. You can keep up with the Treset in West Virginia by searching Appalachians Against Pipelines on Facebook. And you can keep up with the Three Sisters Camp at the number 3 Sisters Camp on Twitter. On March 10th, up to 10,000 marched in Vancouver against the construction of a Kinder Morgan pipeline in so-called British Columbia. However, there are also ongoing direct action campaigns on the ground, such as Camp Cloud and the Tiny House Warriors, who are directly blocking pipeline construction and have called for more boots on the ground. A video on Submedia reports that on March 19th, people blocked tree-cutting equipment on Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia, land which is slated to be cleared for Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion that would bring oil from Alberta's tar sands to the port of Vancouver. The actions were done by autonomous individuals unaffiliated with environmental NGOs. 6 were arrested. On Saturday, Wobblies agitated outside an Amazon Flex distribution center in Seattle. For a couple weeks before the action, they had covered the area around the warehouse with posters announcing an upcoming Amazon workers' strike in Spain. On Saturday, they held banners that read, "Make Amazon Pay" and "Never Trust Management." A few of the workers expressed enthusiastic support for the action, and about 24 drivers took IWW material with them. In their report on the action, some of the agitators explained the dystopian conditions of these Amazon Flex centers. Quote, "This machine is the primary robot the workers interact with throughout the day, and the speed of the conveyor is accelerated when it seems the crew won't meet their individual goals of 180 packages an hour. It's unclear if management or an algorithm is in control of the conveyor belt speed. In more ways than just these simple mechanics, these warehouse workers are kept in a precarious and exploited state through every aspect of their employment with Amazon. When the company decides to flex up, workers are called in unexpectedly and given longer hours along the conveyor belt. The only way to get out of these sudden calls is to use a limited number of voluntary leave days. if a worker runs out of these days, they will be fired for not flexing up. When the company decides to flex down, workers are placed on forced leave and given limited hours. Despite the hip and flexy internal corporate lingo, this job remains highly insecure and precarious. March 18th was election day in Russia. To no one's surprise, Putin won, which liberal pundits treated as just further evidence that Putin is a dictator, so Trump is bad because they colluded, and Putin bad, Trump bad, collusion, Putin, Trump, Putin, Putin, Trump, Trump, ad nauseum. But for as much as a Colbert-loving liberal laugh-o-sphere likes to paint Trump as being tied to an oppressive autocrat, they won't focus on the anarchists who have been tortured and imprisoned in Putin's Russia, nor their critique that it's not Putin himself, but the power he holds that is oppressive. In the week leading up to the election, solidarity actions were called for with anarchists facing repression in Russia. The call was answered by actions outside Russian consulates in cities like Barcelona, Toronto, Prague, Berlin, Sydney, and many more. In Russia itself, actions were held in over a dozen cities, including Moscow, St. Petersburg, and Chelyabinsk. We caught up with a Russian anarchist to discuss the week of solidarity and the election. Can you tell us who we're speaking with?
My name is Tanya. I'm from Murmansk, Russia, but now I'm living in Germany, and I'm involved in solidarity campaign with Russian anarchists and anti-fascists.
And can you talk about what's been going on around the recent election in Russia?
Yeah, so there were no surprise about who won. Maybe a little bit surprised of the percentage of how many people voted and how many people voted for Putin. But actually, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, this is not a question of one person. Anyone who would have such a power could become the same dictator. So the problem is mostly in the system, not in the leader. That's why we decided that, yeah, maybe it sounds quite strange in Russia to say that you are against democracy because, like, so many people want it and opposition want it. But we know that it's not what we want, and who, if not we, would be so radical to say that even a democracy is not the best thing in the world. We were doing in Russia an anti-election campaign called Illusion of Choice or Illusion of Election. We connected together topics of repressions and tortures that are going on in Russia in elections, and we're saying that yes, you should not vote for this kind of regime, and elections are shit by itself, but also the regimes that are just could give you tortures, repressions and prisons is like not what we want, and that we should show the solidarity of people who are suffering from it.
Will you tell us about the ongoing repression that's happening there?
So close to elections, and also because we have a soccer World Cup, there's always a reason for secret services to make some anti-terror activities. So starting from October, there were several people arrested, first in Penza and then St. Petersburg, Moscow, Chelyabinsk. And there is a case created called the case of Anarchist Terrorist Network. And people are accused to do some explosions during elections and World Cup. But all of them were tortured with electric shock. And now several people that are not connected to this case were also arrested, or those who were making solidarity actions, and also was tortured with electric shock. So now it's like mostly anarchists and anti-fascists are suffering from repressions and from hard tortures. Now we are concentrated our power, our activities on solidarity, on getting people out from prisons, getting people out from Russia, to help them to deal with the torture, trauma, and so on. And we understand FSB is now using this case, this terrorist case, against everyone. Just say, like, or you say us what we want, or we would include you in this terrorist case. So then it means that we start to center ourselves and, like, do less. And a lot of people left Russia just because they were threatened. I would say that it's kind of killing the movement right now.
What can anarchists outside Russia do to help?
Yeah, of course, we really need to spread information in any case. Like, if people want to write some articles, like, a lot of information in English at autonom.org. And also, we will be happy to if people could make an actions better in front of the consulates and embassies of Russia, because then definitely Russian government will be informed that there were some actions in other countries. And we're, of course, collecting money to the ABC of Moscow to pay for lawyers, help to relatives to deal with all the financial situations. I would say that there is a need of safe spaces, places, possibilities to legalize someone somewhere outside of Russia, because some people really need to escape right now.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I and the people who is now in prison and their relatives and all who is involved in this solid campaign, just really thankful for everyone who is doing actions, sending money, spreading info. Yeah, it's just super important for us and to the arrested people not to feel that we are alone.
Thanks so much for speaking with us, and we're holding you all in our hearts. Stay tuned to crimethink.com in the next week for an in-depth text and posters about the repression that anarchists in Russia are facing. March 14th was the one-month anniversary of the deadly school shooting in Parkland, Florida, by bigoted, MAGA and swastika sporting Nicholas Cruz. Nearly 200,000 students from over 3,000 schools across the country walked out of class, the largest school walkouts since the civil rights movement. While the Democratic Party has been trying to co-opt youth outrage since the shooting, a roundup of the actions shows that a significant number of the student rebels were demonstrating for far more radical reasons than gun control. In Nashville, Tennessee, students walked out of school, pulled down the American flag, and jumped on a cop car. In Chicago, students staged sit-ins inside City Hall and issued a wide range of demands.
Fund schools for students, not a new police academy that would cost $95 million. Support black and brown businesses. Reopen mental health clinics. Fund community centers and community schools. Stop charter expansion. Make Chicago a real sanctuary for all by eliminating carve-outs in welcoming city ordinance. Jobs for youth. Improve language access and culturally relevant curriculum. Fully fund special ed and bilingual services. End the criminalization of youth. Eliminate the gang database. No guns in schools. Student committees for hiring of school staff. Restorative justice training for school staff, and focus on building trusting relationships with students so that schools become a family connected to the larger community.
While we don't agree with all of the demands, or even the demand form per se, they certainly show that these walkouts were about far more than gun control. Students from Ursuline Academy, New Orleans, skipped their school's sanctioned prayer event to hit the streets with rebel youth from other high schools. In Minneapolis, a reactionary student holding an American flag with Trump's name on it was physically confronted and had the flag ripped from his hands by other students. In San Francisco, marching students alternated chanting Black Lives Matter with cries to abolish the NRA. In Brooklyn, predominantly black students from the Academy for Young Writers walked out and invoked names of people of color who were killed by police, like Philando Castile and Tamir Rice. In many of the walkouts, police and administrator repression showed the conflict between youth self-determination and adult authority. In Omaha, a march of over 100 teens was reportedly kettled and dispersed by police. Walkout students in Chicago were arrested. Black students at Booker T. Washington High in Atlanta, the high school Martin Luther King Jr. attended, were threatened with disciplinary action if they followed their famous alum's example of civil disobedience. So they took a knee in the hallway instead. In perhaps the most metaphorical action of the day, students at Mount Diablo High in the Bay Area literally broke through locked gates to stage their walkout. We applaud the students who demonstrated last Wednesday for not allowing adults to control how you express yourselves and for not limiting your desires to a single demand. One journalist in Chicago reported that at the walkout she attended, one young person even held a sign that read, "Gun control is not the answer." And we agree. The answer is liberated youth taking control. For future walkouts and student protests, like the March for Our Lives on Saturday, March 24th, CrimeThink has published a set of easily printable posters, handbills, and zines detailing the anarchist argument about why the solution to mass shootings begins with youth liberation and why gun control is a false solution. You can find the text and the printable PDFs at crimethink.com. For more coverage of youth resistance, make sure to check out the new blog, Cutting Class, a counter-information site for the ungovernable generation. It's at cuttingclass.noblogs.org. While rebel students walk out of high schools, the West Virginia teacher strike has seen reverberations rippling out. As It's Going Down reports, last Friday, teachers in New Jersey walked off the job on strike and even blocked scab teachers from coming in. They were also joined on the picket lines by students. Well, union leaders sent strikers back to work on Monday. Hopefully, rank-and-file workers can take the struggle into their own hands. Teachers in Puerto Rico went on strike for one day across the island against attempts by disaster capitalists to privatize the school system and switch students over to a system of vouchers. We are hearing reports of awesome things, like teachers running free schools in squatted buildings, and hope to have more to report soon. For background on the years-long struggle against educational austerity in Puerto Rico, check out episode 9 of Submedia Show Trouble, entitled Learning to Resist.
Hey y'all, this is Joe from New York City Anarchist Black Cross. When I'm looking for ways to support anarchist political prisoners, like the upcoming June 3rd Running Down the Walls fundraiser, I check out itsgoingdown.org.
It's going down, and you're invited for what they sell it. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
In this week's Repression Roundup, 10 years after being rounded up, trial began last week for defendants from the Tarnak 9 case of conspiracy and rail sabotage in France. One of the defendants, Julien Coupas, who authorities accuse of authoring the best-selling manifesto, The Coming Insurrection, refused to plead neither guilty nor innocent on the first day of trial. The Bloc Party column from It's Going Down reports, quote, Alejandra Pablos was picked up by ICE and taken to detention in Aloy, Arizona. Ale was released on an immigration bond 4 years ago after having been in detention for 2 years. In the 4 years since then, she has been an active member of the Tucson community and the national efforts for both reproductive justice and justice for undocumented people. Her detention by ICE came very shortly after she was arrested at an anti-ICE demonstration where people on the ground reported the arresting officer commented that she was targeted for arrest because she was chanting the loudest. In our show notes, we have links for ways to support Ale and donate to her legal defense. Last Tuesday, three of the Black Pride 4 received fines, community service, and 2 years probation for their arrests at a 2017 Columbus, Ohio Pride March, where they were protesting police violence, violence against trans women, and marginalization of people of color within the LGBT community. Ahead of the sentencing, solidarity actions took place around the country. In Columbus, folks rallied in front of City Hall. In D.C., Stop Police Terror and No Justice, No Pride rallied outside the Department of Justice and raised their middle fingers in defiance. In Brooklyn, New York, folks gathered and read the names of trans folks who have died, followed by Trans Lives Matter and Free the Black Pride 4. One more person is awaiting sentencing, so let's keep the solidarity up. Valve Turner Michael Foster has been transferred to a new prison, so please write him and or send a book. Foster is serving a one-year sentence for taking part in actions to stop the flow of tar sands oil coming from Canada. Supporters of Black Liberation Movement prisoner Herman Bell are calling on folks to call Governor Cuomo at 518-474-8390 and express support for the parole board's decision, or tweet him at NYGovCuomo on Twitter. We have a sample script in our show notes at crimethink.com. In the J20 case, the defendants that were set to go to trial on March 26th have been continued to later dates. meaning the next trial is April 17th. Consider coming to D.C. to pack the courthouse and show some support. And follow at DefendJ20 on Twitter for ongoing updates. In Santiago, Chile, anarchist Juan Flores was sentenced to 23 years in prison in the conspiracy case Caso Bombas 2. The first bombs case in 2010 was a major conspiracy case that the state assembled to pin a string of anti-capitalist and anti-police incendiary actions on anarchists and anti-authoritarians throughout Santiago. The police used it as an excuse to raid and shut down the majority of the squatted social centers there. In the end, however, the defendants were acquitted and the case was an embarrassment for the Chilean government. In the current bombs case, two of the three defendants were acquitted on all charges, but Juan Flores was not only found guilty, but guilty of the anti-terrorism law. It's the first time that a court in Chile has successfully used the anti-terrorism law to gain a conviction against anarchists, which is a serious advance in the state's repressive apparatus there. Check out episode 30 of The Ex-Worker to listen to an interview with Tortuga, an anarchist in Chile who openly admits to attempting to bomb a closed bank and who faced anti-terrorism charges for it. The campaign to free anarchist Luis Fernando Sotelo, who has been in prison in Mexico since 2014, recently made a call for support in the efforts to free Luis. You can demand Luis's release and make clear the unconstitutionality of Article 362 by tweeting the Mexican Supreme Court at SCJN on Twitter or emailing them at contacto@scjn.gov.mx. Last Wednesday, police clashed with migrants and refugees at the Moria Detention Center on the island of Lesbos, Greece. The clashes occurred as trial was set for April 20th for the 35 migrants accused of participating in a July 2017 revolt at the same detention center. You can find out more about how to support the migrants about to go to trial at FreeTheMoria35 on Twitter. We'll close out our episode with political prisoner birthdays and next week's news. Today, March 21st, is political prisoner Jan Lemann's birthday. Jan's group, the United Freedom Front, carried out a number of bombings of unoccupied military and corporate offices in the 1970s and 80s as armed propaganda against U.S. imperialism and the apartheid regime in South Africa. Writing Jan a letter will only take you a few minutes, but it could be the highlight of his week. We have his mailing address in this episode's show notes at crimethink.com/podcast, as well as a link to a beginner's guide to writing prisoners from New York City anarchist Black Cross. And now, next week's news, our list of events that you can plug into in real life. This Saturday is the March for Our Lives, with a big march in D.C. and over 700 local rallies around the U.S. While liberals are sure to flock to these rallies, the walkouts last week showed that many of the students going have critiques that go well beyond gun control. We recommend anarchists engaging in the rallies and trying to put the focus back on white supremacy, toxic masculinity, militarism, and the state. Go to crimethink.com for easily printable zines, handbills, and posters that you can distribute at a March for Our Lives near you. Saturday is also the International Day of Solidarity with Rojava and in defense of Afrin. Solidarity is needed now more than ever as the Turkish army has surrounded the city and launched a ground assault, including cutting off water supplies. Solidarity actions with Afrin have continued to rage across Europe this week, with arsons against military contractors in Turin, Italy, and Soltau, Germany. Hey, here's an idea. Let's take all the guns from the angry, sexist white men and give them to the Women's Army of the YPJ. To find an Afrin Solidarity action near you, or list one that you organize yourself, go to thenaka.org. That's thenaka.org. Mark Bray continues his book tour for Antifa this week. You can catch him on Thursday, March 22nd at the Civic Theater in Nelson, British Columbia. Monday, March 26th at the Brooklyn Historical Society in New York. Tuesday, March 27th at Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. And on Thursday, March 29th at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. Mutual Aid Disaster Relief continue their speaking tour, on communities in resistance to disaster capitalism and community organizing as disaster preparedness. This week, you can find their tour in Charlottesville, Virginia at the Friends Meeting House at 3 p.m. on March 21st, at the Base Anarchist Community Center in Brooklyn, New York at 7 p.m. on March 23rd and 12 noon on March 24th, and at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Storrs, Connecticut at 5:30 p.m. on March 27th and 1 p.m. on March 28th. Go to mutualaiddisasterrelief.org to find details on all the tour dates from now through May. On March 24th, listeners in New York City can celebrate 2 decades of political prisoner support at the 20th anniversary celebration for the National Jericho Movement. The Jericho Movement does some great work to support and connect political prisoners across struggles. We here at The Hotwire often use their website as a resource to learn more about political prisoners' history. The celebration will take place at Holyrood Episcopal Church on 179th Street, with dinner at 5 p.m. and the full program at 6:30. March 24th to the 27th is the International Offensive to Free political prisoner and former Black Panther, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Supporters are calling on folks to take local actions to free Mumia, and for March 27th to pack the courthouse in Philadelphia. They're also calling on folks to call the DA at 215-586-8000 and tell him to release all police files on Mumia to the public. You can find out more at freemumia.com. From April 6th to April 8th, the 14th Zagreb Anarchist Book Fair will take place in Croatia. For more info in Croatian and English, go to ask-zagreb.org. There's another anarchist book fair that weekend on April 7th in Liverpool, England. You can find out more at Liverpool Anarchist Book Fair on Facebook. The Montreal Anarchist Book Fair, which boasts to be the largest such gathering in North America, has announced its dates for this spring. They're currently accepting proposals for workshops and activities. Go to anarchistbookfair.ca to find out more. The North American Anarchist Studies Network Conference is also taking place in Montreal from June 1st through the 3rd. And then the G7 Summit is taking place June 8th and 9th outside Quebec City. It looks like it just might be a summer of anarchy in Quebec this year. The ACAP, another Carolina Anarchist Book Fair in Asheville, North Carolina, happening June 22nd through the 24th, is also looking for workshop submissions. Find out more at acab2018.noblogs.org. That's acab2018.noblogs.org. The second annual Institute for Advanced Troublemaking will take place from July 21st to the 29th in Worcester, Massachusetts. The Institute for Advanced Troublemaking is a week-long anarchist summer school offering classes on anarcho-feminism, prefigurative politics, and communities of care, decolonizing anarchism, direct action praxis, reframing animal liberation as an exercise in anti-racism, social anarchism and radical ecology, trying anarchism for life, and understanding repression and building resilience. You can sign up and find out more at advancedtroublemaking.wordpress.com. And that's it for this episode of The Hotwire. As always, thanks to Underground Reverie for the music, and thanks to our correspondents from Russia and Brazil. Don't forget to check out all the links, mailing addresses, and useful show notes we have customized for this episode at crimethink.com. Every Hotwire is radio ready, so if you want to replay part or all of this show, just go for it. Stay informed, stay rebel, plug into The Hotwire.